While many are living in fear, today on The Balanced Word, we'll see the much better way of courageous Christian living.
So many of the decisions that we make are based on, well, if I do this, I'm afraid this is going to ensue. I'm afraid if I do this, then this person is going to do it. And so much of our lives, we're making decisions constantly based on what we're afraid might happen. That's a wrong, and it's just a, it chokes you, it suffocates you when your whole life's decisions are made on what do people think of me or how are people going to react to what I do.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
We live in a world that is becoming more and more hostile towards Christians. All around the world, we see the persecution of believers growing at an alarming rate. And we even see the beginning of that here in America. Well, today on The Balanced Word, Pastor Dave Rolfe teaches from Daniel chapter 6 about the persecution of Daniel that landed him in the lion's den. It's one of the more familiar stories in the Old Testament and has a lot to say to us about courage and deliverance. So set aside the next half hour as we seek to become courageous Christians ourselves. And now, here's Pastor Dave.
So, Daniel chapter 6. We're going through the Old Testament this year. And as we go through picking out some of the key Bible stories, we can't get all of them. But we couldn't not do Daniel chapter 6, the story of Daniel in the lion's den. It's one of the greatest stories ever. And it's something that if you were... when you were a child, if you went to Sunday school, you definitely saw this story, heard this story, saw flannel graph lions and things like that about him being tossed into the lion's den and pictures of Daniel sleeping on a lion and things like that. So it's a great story. It's an amazing story. It's a true story. But it's also a story like all the stories, as we say every week. These stories are in here in the Old Testament so that they can be an example and a lesson for us, and so we'll look at it. Well, remember, well, last week in Daniel chapter 5, Daniel, who had been a Hebrew slave, taken captive by the Babylonians early on in his life, had been really important to Nebuchadnezzar because he had interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dreams, and so Nebuchadnezzar really respected him. But after Nebuchadnezzar died and his son Nabonidus and then his grandson Belshazzar kind of took over, Daniel sort of went into retirement. They didn't really know him too much anymore. But as we saw last week in Daniel chapter 5, when there was handwriting on the wall, the queen mother said, hey, there's this guy Daniel, and brought Daniel in, and he was able to interpret the dream. So he should have then become important to Belshazzar, except part of the prophecy was, Belshazzar, you're going to die tonight, and the Medes are going to come in and take over. The Medes and the Persians are going to come and take over your kingdom. Now, Darius the Mede, who was the leader of the Medo-Persian Empire when they conquered the Babylonians that night, no doubt heard that there was this Jewish slave who could interpret things, and he predicted that the Medes and Persians were going to take over Babylon before it actually happened. And so Darius was drawn to Daniel. He was impressed by him. As he studied his history, as they would have, when one empire conquers another one, they like to understand the history behind it. And so he had great respect for Daniel as a result of Daniel's great history. And at this point, Daniel's probably in his 70s or 80s. So he ended up making Daniel come out of retirement and become one of his top leaders. And as you see there right in the first verse, it says, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps. Satraps were the Persians would have these like governors who were over individual provinces. So the Medo-Persian Empire was divided up into 120 provinces. Each province had a satrap. And then it says, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, so that the satraps could be accountable to them. So you have Darius at the top. He's in charge. under him three direct reports, these three governors, of whom Daniel was one of them, under those three, 120 satraps, who then would administrate everything that went on in all the provinces. So this is set up. Now, as you read on, he realized, Darius did, that Daniel was way smarter and more capable and more faithful than any of the 120 satraps. And in fact, he stood head and shoulders above the other two governors that were his peers. And so Darius is thinking about making Daniel in charge of everything. He's thinking about promoting Daniel to where he's in charge of everything, governors under him, satraps under them. Well, as you read through the story, you realize the other guys weren't too crazy about that. If you were a competitor to someone in terms of the chain of command, the last thing you would want to see is one of your peers promoted to become your boss. It's awkward. Maybe you've been in that position where somebody who was just like you and you saw them as like being equal with you or maybe even inferior to you, and you hear that they're taking over, it's like, oh boy, this isn't right. I should be the one that gets this promotion. So they had amazing jealousy. Probably a part of what ticked him off too was that he's a Jewish slave who had elevated. He's going to run the Medo-Persian Empire. He had been a leader in the Babylonian Empire. So why should he rule over us? Not only that, before that, he was Jewish, and he's a slave. And so they really felt like he's not the guy, definitely. So the 120 satraps and two of the three governors, Daniel probably wasn't invited to the meeting, they got together and they go, how can we keep Daniel from taking over? There's got to be something that we can find that we can nail him on and rat him out and get him fired. And so they started studying his life. They began to look. They tailed him everywhere he would go, put him under surveillance, were listening at his window. They had, you know, TMZ following him every time he came out of a restaurant. There they were. And they're like, their conclusion was pretty amazing. Look at verse 4 of Daniel chapter 6. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error. He hadn't even made mistakes or fault found in him. Can you imagine being the kind of person? I mean, if you followed almost anyone to try to find something, you could find something that they did that was at least a mistake. But they followed him with intention. And they couldn't find a single thing he did that was wrong or even a single mistake he made in relationship to either his lifestyle or in relationship to his governance. So they said, now they should have at that point gone, you know, what were we thinking? This guy's like perfect. He'd be the perfect guy to be our boss. He'd be the perfect one. And we know him already, and he's a good guy. He's not going to shaft us. This would be great. But instead, their jealousy caused them to go, we got to bring him down. So they cooked up a plan, and you can read it there in chapter 6. And they came to Darius, and they said, we've all been talking, all 122, 23, whatever of us. You know, they don't mention, well, Daniel wasn't in it. It's like everybody thinks this way. That's like the ultimate trump card. You know, we've all been talking. Well, how many people actually talking? Well, everybody but Daniel. They said, no, you're an amazing king. And we're thinking for this month only, we should have a special time of tribute for you. We all think it's a great idea. And here's the deal. Let's make a law that says for 30 days, anyone who worships anyone but you, they'll be tossed in the lion's den. We all think it's true. And he's like, worshiping me for 30 days. That sounds like a good idea, and they go, here, here's the bill. We already drew it up. Just sign your name, put your stamp on it, and it's a law. And king, remember, you know, the laws of the Medes and Persians, you can't undo it. Even you can't. So it's like, this is a big deal. We're going to celebrate you, and nobody can stop us, and nobody can change it. And he goes, yeah, you're right. He goes, it's the law of the Medes and Persians. Okay, I'm going to do it. It fed his ego enough that he just went for it. So they do that. They lay it all out. He signs it, stamps it. Daniel finds out about it. And I'm sure if he was that smart, he realized that they were after him. That the whole intention of this thing was to hurt him. But the one thing that they saw is, well, let's take a look at Daniel's response. So they got the thing signed. And in verse 10, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since the early days. He just goes, this is what I do. There wasn't something in the Old Testament law that commanded that you face Jerusalem, open your windows, and pray 3 times a day. He just came up with this at some point. This was his habitual behavior. This is what he did. And so he went ahead and did it anyway, knowing that his life is in danger. Well, they got the pictures. They caught him. They brought him before Darius, and they go, well, you know, remember the law that you just passed, that we wrote? One of your Jewish servants, Daniel, and he's like, Daniel? Yeah, he broke that law. He doesn't respect you at all. He is dissing you by praying openly in his window in front of everyone. This is a slap in the face to you. He needs to be thrown in the lion's den. And Darius was really bummed because he was thinking about promoting Daniel to the leader. But he goes, yeah, I guess that's the law. That's the law. I have to do it. And he said, okay. But then as they were taking Daniel by to throw him in the lion's den, he said, Daniel, your God, he's going to deliver you. I know that he can. I've seen what you've done. I've read the stories. Your God will deliver you. But he felt terrible. He was very apologetic. And Daniel got thrown in the lion's den. And all night long, the king couldn't sleep. He was wrestling with this whole issue, this whole problem, feeling like an idiot for being conned into doing this. And Daniel's in the lion's den. The king actually did have some faith in Daniel's God, because if it was me and I felt bad about a guy being thrown in the lion's den, I'm not going to then go see what he looks like in the morning. I'd have a pretty good idea what he's going to look like. But Darius comes and with kind of halting speech calls into the den and says, Daniel, did your God deliver you? And Daniel goes, yeah, no problem. He sent an angel and shut the lion's mouths and we're having fun down here. Well, come on out. And he sends people that brings him out. And then Darius is like, I'm a real believer now. In fact, I'm going to make a law of the Medes and Persians that anybody who worships any god other than your God, they're breaking the law. They are in trouble. Boom, here's the law. So he totally switches it around and now says you can't worship anybody but Daniel's God. And then the part that they don't tell you in your Sunday school classes, he goes, okay, get those guys who plotted this thing and bring them here and let them bring their families too and push them into the lion's den. So, I know it sounds cruel, but I mean, God didn't do it. It was a pagan king. But they all got thrown in there, and these lions were so hungry that it says they caught them in midair and ate them before they could even hit the bottom of the den. Again, I've never seen a flannel graph picture of that. But there's the story. An amazing story of courage and triumph and deliverance and you know, just, it's awesome. So what do we learn from it? What do we take away? What is it that God said, I'm recording this story so that people thousands of years from now can read it and it will mean something to them in their lives? Well, one of the things that jumps out at me about this story is Daniel wasn't afraid of anybody. He wasn't afraid of the people who were trying to destroy him. He wasn't afraid of the king's wrath. He wasn't afraid of the lion's mouth. Daniel lived his life courageously. Now, let's be realistic. That doesn't mean that he didn't feel afraid. Having no fear doesn't mean that you don't feel fear. Having no fear means that fear doesn't run your life. That when it was time for him to pray, he prayed. He didn't think, okay, maybe now I know what these guys are doing. I better close the door, turn the alarm on, and then they're not going to catch me. Or he didn't even think, I can have the doors, you know, the windows of the, open enough that I can see the line toward Jerusalem, but nobody can really see if I'm praying or not. Or even to go, you know, God hears me even when I don't pray out loud. So I'm just going to like be praying in my heart between me and God. Any of those things, there's nothing wrong with doing them, but he would have been doing them because of what he was afraid of. And Daniel chose to live his life not based on, I'm going to do something because I'm afraid of it. I think that so much of what we do is based on fear. So many of the decisions that we make are based on, well, if I do this, I'm afraid this is going to ensue. I'm afraid if I do this, then this person is going to do it. And so much of our lives, we're making decisions constantly based on what we're afraid might happen. That's a wrong, and it's just it chokes you, it suffocates you when your whole life's decisions are made on what do people think of me or how are people going to react to what I do. I think that it's one reason why people will pay money to go and do things that are scary, like ride a roller coaster. And I think, I mean, at my age, I've been on enough roller coasters. I don't enjoy them anymore. But once in a while, I'll go on one anyway, just because I want to know that I will do things even if I'm afraid of it. Now, at this point, I'm not afraid, like, oh, I'll be upside down and feel weird. I'm afraid it'll break my neck. I'm afraid I'll throw up all over myself. I'm afraid I'll embarrass myself. But there are things in my life that I do just because I don't want to say, I do whatever I do based on what I'm afraid of. Daniel wasn't that guy at all. He would do what he had decided to do. And he wasn't going to let what somebody else does, you know, determine his fate. People today are so scared. Somebody told me there was an article in the paper this last week about what people in Orange County are most afraid of. And one of the top things was identity theft. And I got a thing in the mail. Oh, you used your credit card at Home Depot, so now we're going to send you a new card. Big deal. I mean, why am I afraid of that? I know the way credit cards are. If I've been, you know, there have been times when I had identity theft happen to me, filled out a couple papers, and it was okay. And yet people are just scared to death of that. Ooh, I'm afraid that's going to happen to me. Most of us, it won't happen to us. And if it does, we won't suffer any kind of loss, maybe a few minutes of our time. But we're scared. Some people, I watch them driving on the road, and the whole time, they're scared to death of cops. They're like, they're on the freeway, they're driving like 85, and they're like this, all paranoid. And it's like, well, you could just slow down. Or you could decide, actually, it's worth it to me to get there faster, and I'll factor into it. Once in a while, I'm going to pay a ticket. But, you know, instead, oh no, we're so used to the grip of fear on our lives. One time, my wife can't really lie very well. She lies all the time, but she's not good. She's not good at it at all. And we were down in Mexico, and we walked across the border, and my brother was with us, and Ann and I, and my brother had bought a switchblade. And so he wanted to sneak it back, you know, into the United States. Well, he goes, here, Anne, this is all I bought. Put it in your purse. And she goes, no, I can't lie. I'm really obvious. Oh, and I'm even going, come on, Anne. Just so she stuck it in a glasses case way down in the bottom of her purse. And we go, okay, we're walking across the border. So I walk across first. I'm carrying like a bullwhip and some other stuff. And they don't stop me. It's just walk right through. Then my brother comes through with like nothing, no problem. And I turn around, and I'm not exaggerating it at all. Anne is coming across the border with her purse clutched to her chest. And she's like this. And they go, put your purse down. And then she's going, Dave, am I going to go to a Tijuana jail? I go, that'll be okay. And so technically my wife was convicted of smuggling. And the fine was they took the knife and they fined us twice the value of the knife, which was twice what we had paid for it. So technically we got fined $20. But that's a lot of people's lives are just like, oh, what are they thinking about me? And what are they going to do? Ooh, if I do this, what? That's not the way we're designed to live. We're designed to live sometimes to do things that we feel fear about, but to decide, you know what? I'm not going to worry. If I tell somebody that I'm going to church or if I tell somebody about Jesus, they might laugh at me. So what? Why are you going to let that determine what you can say? Oh, if people are saying their opinions, if I give mine, I'm afraid they're going to. And a lot of Christians even think that somehow if people see me being honest, that is going to ruin their picture of Jesus. Really? Am I going to be afraid that something I do messes up things for Jesus? Really? I mean, he's way better than that. And if he is depending on me to be really perfect so that people will see him, he's in trouble. He's just pretty much done. But we live in fear.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com. or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Daniel was courageous, to be sure, but he also displayed amazing discipline, as Pastor Dave Rolfe now explains.
We have a guy like Daniel who goes, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. And I don't care what people think of it, and I don't care what they're going to do about it, and they may kill me, but I am not the kind of person that just does what's based on what I'm afraid of. I'm a person that just lives my life and does what I'm used to doing. Now, going along with that concept of fear is the idea that, you know, he had a life of discipline. See, this business of every day at the same time, in the same way, facing Jerusalem, windows open, he would pray. Now, sometimes we would look at that and go, yeah, that's what you need to do. You need to be legalistic. You have to do what God says no matter what. No, God never said that. God never said you have to pray three times a day facing Jerusalem. It doesn't say as God commanded. It says as was his custom. He'd been doing it for a long time. In other words, he developed this habit on his own. And I wonder, do we even care to develop good habits? Do we have discipline in our lives to say, you know, I'm going to do this? And even more than that, why do we do what we do? Do we do what we do because we have to? Or do we do what we do because that's what we want to do? That's what we choose to do. That's what we believe is who we want to be.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this has been The Balanced Word with Dave Roth. We'll have another great Bible story for you next time. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play.